Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Greetings, everyone, from lovely Sri Lanka. Katie and I are winding down our time here in Sri Lanka already. Man, time has flown by. We had to buy our plane ticket out of Sri Lanka before coming here just to get our visa. Unfortunately, a lot of countries, especially island nations, are becoming more strict these days about having tickets in and out, and they won't let you into the country if you don't have a return flight. And you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. It's that kind of attitude. So we bought a ticket to India before coming here, and we got 30 days on our visas, and we're staying here for pretty much all of it. And we were looking at the map before coming here of Sri Lanka, and it looks like a really small country. I mean, look at it next to India. It's tiny. And yet there's so much to do here. So we thought, well, let's just take a whole month. That's what the government will give you without you begging for more time. Let's just take that whole month. And I'm sure it'll be enough time. Definitely it will be, even though there's a lot to do here. Well, we got here, we started traveling, and we're like, oh, well, now there's this stuff, and now there's this and this, and oh, there's all this stuff that I didn't realize. As we met more people, we learned about more cool experiences and different places. And now, before we know it, our time is almost up. We thought we'd come up to the north for like half of our time, like 2 weeks. It turns out we only have a week or less. So now we find ourselves in Jaffna, in the far north of the country, and we're both exhausted. I mean, we've been traveling fast lately. We desperately need to take a day or two off just to relax or sleep. But at the same time, our flight's coming up in like 4 days, so if we take a day off now, then that just takes away from our precious little time remaining in this country. And we've really loved traveling around Sri Lanka so far. So we're going to try to push through this, maybe rest a little bit more in India. And I know I sound like some privileged dickhead saying this, because I'm saying, oh, I only get 30 days to travel in Sri Lanka. And I know a lot of you are probably thinking, like, whoa, well, my job only gives me 10 vacation days all year. Like, what kind of idiot are you to complain about this? I know, I've been there. I get it. That's why I left corporate America. Maybe I'll come back sometime, but I think the best way to do it for me is to completely get out of that entire existence so that you have more time to travel. But I guess right now the message that I want to bring this all back to is it's never enough time. I think as I've been thinking about this more and more lately, I've come to this realization that travel is fractal. Okay, maybe not literally fractal in the scientific sense, but it looks like a fractal in some certain ways, at least to the first few degrees that you dig into it. Those first few layers of the onion you peel back. I mean, as a kid, you look at the globe and you think, yeah, that's nice. That's what our planet looks like. And you have really no perspective to show, like, well, this place is has such vastly different landscapes than this other place, and different cultures and people and languages and religions. And there's all these people, 7 billion of us coexisting on this planet, and we live very different lives. And as you grow up a little bit, maybe you get to high school, you learn about the continents. I think Americans tend to learn there's 7 continents. Other nationalities learn there's 6 or even 5. Another interesting side topic, we can't even agree on that. But then you think, wow, okay, Africa's like this, Europe is like this, Asia's like this. So now you've separated these continents into little differences. But then as you dig deeper, you go to a country and you realize, like, well, I mean, this happened to me for sure in South America. Like, oh, well, Bolivia is a little different than Peru. Wow, and Argentina is very different from Bolivia. They don't look at all alike in terms of culture or landscapes, any of that stuff. And then as you travel more, you start spending a month or more in each country, and different regions of the country look different. And you start realizing there's so much more to see than you thought before. It's not just going to China for a week or two. China's a giant country. There's so much there. There's a lifetime of exploration to be done there, and you still won't see it all. So as I peel back more and more of these layers of the onion, I keep on being blown away by how much there is out there. I mean, before Katie and I started this trip, even I, as a relatively experienced traveler, I thought, well, some of these countries I'm going to never go back to. Like, I don't know, take Sri Lanka, for example. A month here will be enough. I won't feel the need to go back. But now I'm like, there's a lot of stuff I'm missing. So maybe someday I will come back. Obviously, Russia, a month in Russia is like nothing. That country is twice as big as the U.S. It's giant. So I'm sure I'll make a return trip there someday, if for nothing else than to see the entirety of the Trans-Siberian from Moscow to Vladivostok, or vice versa. Japan, Katie and I spent a month there cycling around, but we didn't get to Hokkaido or northern Honshu. I mean, I think we could spend a couple more months just in that area and still not find that we're satisfied. Anyway, I guess the point is, it's never enough. There's always more to see. But when you think about it, that's a good thing. It means in this travel life of yours, you're never going to get bored. Or if you are bored, it's your own fault. You have to go somewhere new. There's more places. There's more stuff to do. There's more adventures to be had. You just got to go out there and find them. And our lifespans are just simply not long enough to explore this entire planet of ours. But at times I kind of wish that there were a little less stuff, because now we're winding down our time in Sri Lanka, like I said, and I'm thinking of all the stuff that I missed, even after being here for a month. But anyway, I can't dwell on that. Let's move on to this week's podcast. All right, we recorded this a few days ago, maybe even a week ago, late February, let's say, and Katie and I were just a few miles from the southernmost point in Sri Lanka. We actually went to that point. There's a lighthouse, and right next to it, a little bit further south of the lighthouse, interestingly, there's this little park and rocky area, and these kids were playing cricket there, and we see cricket being played all over the place in Sri Lanka. It's super popular here, as it is in most of the former British colonies and the Commonwealth nations. These kids were just having a lot of fun playing. And we sat there and watched them for a good half an hour, just cheering on when they hit the ball far, and like not cheered on the bowler when he knocked over the wickets, which were made of palm fronds. You know, that kind of thing. That was at the southernmost point of Sri Lanka. And I stared over the ocean and thought, oh my God, there's nothing south of here until Antarctica. And we're near the equator now. That's a lot of ocean. Wow, you could get on a boat and go for a really long distance before hitting land again at that point. So we went back to our guest house, and we ran into this week's guests, Andrej and Nina. And I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your names wrong. These guys were fantastic. They are from Slovakia, and they were staying at the same guest house as us. And they're really good at conversations. We had a great time talking to them. Katie and I did. We had a nice dinner together. They are both now really into surfing. You can just tell listening to both of them talk about it, like it's their passion, and they're actually considering moving to the coast, to maybe Portugal, as you'll hear in the podcast, just so that they can surf more, which is really awesome. There's all kinds of little metaphors between surfing and life and getting through the hard times. And you'll hear some of those come up on during this podcast. The other big thing that we've been struggling with, Katie and I, and these guys as well, is sunburn. It's a daily struggle. We want to be outside. We want to be exploring the area. But the sun is so powerful here. And if you have fair skin, you can get burned within minutes. And a couple days ago, Katie and I went out biking for the day. And we reapplied sunscreen like three times during the day. And still both ended up getting burned. And we did our best to stay in the shade. So Katie jokes when we go to the beach and go to a shady spot that we're being dorks because we're avoiding the sun. But I can't help it. My nose looks like Rudolph just constantly here. And I know it's not good. And I'm doing my best to avoid it. Well, these guys both know where I'm coming from, and they got pretty badly burned immediately upon arriving here. So we talk about that during the podcast as well. All right, that's about all I have for you for now. Let's get into my conversation then with Andrej and Nina. People in like 2050 will be listening to this.
This was our experience in Sri Lanka like 2018.
yeah, this is like our slice in time right here. Yeah. Which brings me to, we were just talking about the tsunami, and that happened in 2004, and I've traveled a little bit on this trip to some of the places affected, like in the Philippines, but they never really talked about it there, and I've heard people talk about it a lot more here. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I get the idea that this, we're looking out over the beach here, and this entire thing was probably destroyed.
But because I would say like it was a really enormous effect the tsunami had on this island. Like I read there were maybe like 100,000 deaths or even more, so which is like pretty huge number
just in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I think it was really major thing. Yeah. But the thing is that I never heard anybody talk about this.
Oh, even here?
Yeah. Or
maybe I haven't heard that many people talk about it. I guess I've just read it more in like The Lonely Planet or whatever online stuff that I'm reading about the area. Mm-hmm. I guess that's probably why. And the really ominous thing that I read though is that they made a new law that you're not allowed to build any hotels within 100 meters mm-hmm. of the high tide mark on mm-hmm. the water. And you just walk around and you see all kinds of new hotels right next to the water. So yeah. if another tsunami comes, or really when another tsunami comes, it's just going to get overrun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one good thing though, probably that will come next time around is people will understand the signs mm-hmm. of it. Because the water goes way out.
Yeah.
And so I guess in 2004, a lot of people saw the water just recede out, way out and further than it normally would.
Yeah.
And all these people would go out and just go, wow, look at this. And they'd run out onto the sand and mm-hmm. catch fish that were flopping around and things like that. And not have any clue that a giant wave was about to kill mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to think about.
I cannot imagine it, like, it has to be so strong, even when you're just surfing and you catch a bigger wave, you feel the power of the nature. And then, imagine it, like, 1,000 times stronger.
Even more, maybe.
Like, even now, we're like, quite on top of the hill. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering, like, how it would look here if the tsunami hit it now.
Right.
Like, if we are high enough to like, survive, for example.
Yeah, would we be okay here?
Probably here we would be fine, but it's so hard to say.
I know how, like, that's a great question. If you know one is coming and you run, how far do you run?
I'm not sure if you stop. Well, yeah. Or if you climb between.
But I would say like probably if you would just climb some palm tree, the palm tree would go with you. So
well, I met an Italian guy actually in on the Amazon in South America, and he was in a hotel, I think it was in Sri Lanka, now that I think about it, and the way he survived was climbing a tree.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, because it happened at night, and he just climbed up to the top, like, as the water was coming out, somehow he got out of his window, and
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I got the feeling like it didn't just come crashing in all at once. Like mm-hmm. the water just came up like mm-hmm. over maybe a 5 minute period or something, at least from his story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God. And it, like, a lot of people in his hotel died.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. And so he went back to Italy for a bit, and then he raised a bunch of money mm-hmm. and came back. I'm pretty sure it was Sri Lanka. He came back here and helped rebuild stuff and mm-hmm. just help the people, because he was so affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He lost everything of his. All he had left was his own life and maybe his underwear. That was it.
Huh.
Wow, that's...
But have you ever tried searching for some, for example, video footage or some photos of how it looked here? Because it was 2004.
Yeah.
So, like, mobile phones with cameras, I guess they were not so, like, usual
no,
at
sucked.
That time.
No, they, yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
So probably you won't find many videos of YouTube, like, tsunami coming or something, you know?
Right. But 2004, I don't know how old you guys are, but that was before YouTube.
Yeah, that was.
That was really before Facebook, or maybe Facebook existed, but it was tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Before, really, social media. Just before, a couple of years before.
Yeah.
Because
I would say, like, 2008, everything like this started
strong. Yeah, it started going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I remember seeing YouTube for the first time in, like, 2006, because I was in the middle of traveling, and someone showed me, like, hey, Dan, here's what you've been missing out on when you've been gone.
Yeah, and I remember that there were, like, all of the videos of the YouTube were in one category of YouTube, and you could see, like, the most seen video on YouTube, but it was maybe, I don't know, 1,000 videos altogether.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. It's really interesting comparing nowadays how huge it is.
Oh, yeah, you see videos with 100 million views.
Yeah.
So. On that topic, I went to this conference a while ago, like 5 years ago, by this guy who at the time had 100,000 Instagram followers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I don't know what's going on in the background here.
Wow.
Oh, birds.
No, it's
monkeys.
Oh, monkeys behind us.
Yeah.
Jumping like crazy on those palm leaves.
Wow.
We saw on that parallel street we are, there were this little house. And on top of the house, there were like five monkeys with the babies on themselves, and they were jumping from one side of the street to another through the
telephone cables, I guess, or electricity cables.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was so cute.
Huh. Yeah.
They never get zapped, I guess.
I guess.
Because you have to touch two at once to get zapped.
Yeah, yeah. So it's safe.
Yeah.
But actually, the monkey interrupted your...
Yeah, we got sidetracked a little bit. I went to... This happens all the time. It's fine. So I went to this conference by this guy who was from my hometown who had like 100,000 Instagram followers. And at that time, that made you one of the highest ones. Mm-hmm. Now you probably need a million to be considered really top level. And I didn't even know what Instagram was. Like, I didn't have a smartphone yet, like nothing. And I was like, okay, well, how do I get into this? And he said his number one way he got that many followers is he was one of the first people on Instagram. I'm like, oh, great. Well, that's really helpful for me.
Yeah.
And then number two was this other early Instagrammer gave him a shout out, which used to be common. I don't think they even do that anymore. And mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, so that's just never going to happen for me. Okay. I really do think this is one of the ways you become a star. Is you get in early for any new technology.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well.
True.
Probably Snapchat's like that too, so.
Like, I think the competition is already so huge there. Yeah. Like, people are, like, professionally doing marketing for other people, like, how to become more known, like, for example, Instagram or YouTube or any other social media. So I'm not really sure if it's worth the effort now, or I don't know, maybe it is, but I don't know. Probably I'm just not so interested in building my personal brand or something. Maybe I'm doing a mistake, but I don't know.
Yeah, me either. I really don't care that much, except I did write a couple of books, and it would be nice if I sold a few copies. And so, like, I guess you can use social media to do that. Yeah. So that'd be nice. So, you know, if you got something to sell, it's cool. But as far as my own ego, it's like, whatever, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I've got my own website with pictures on it, and it's good enough. But, I don't know. What do you guys think is coming next? Any ideas? Like,
if there is some other, if there will be something else than Facebook, for example, or another form or social media.
Right. It seems nowadays that kids aren't even using Facebook anymore. It's like,
yeah,
Yeah, they are mostly on Snapchat, yeah. I would say. Because it's like so fast, quick, and it's simple. Like the idea behind it is really simple, just to share immediate moments, I would say. And it's so fast.
Yeah, and I think it's temporary.
And it's temporary, and it changes a lot. You know, like you have all these different kind of videos coming at you one after another. And I think that's how the times are now for little kids, even or smaller kids. That everything is coming at them, and it's all the time something else, something new, something different. So it's maybe that's what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
Like you will have all these different things in fast pace.
But at the same time, I think there's a quite strong counterculture coming. Like, for example, people are noticing more and more like how it destroys your deep concentration. Mm-hmm. And imagine, like, if you're just working and if you're really using just your head for your work, you're doing creative work or you're doing an engineering job or something like that, the concentration is your strongest asset. And if you've got something that completely destroys or really makes it weaker, then it doesn't really make sense. And I think, personally, I notice more and more that people are starting to use words like mindfulness, meditation, and this kind of stuff.
I hear that stuff more now,
So, also. For some people, they know it for 20 years, but for example, I know it for just a couple of years. Because I think it's because of this counterculture coming.
Same here. Yeah, well, I hope it becomes normal again to not be constantly looking at your phone.
But because I this is something I think about quite a lot, because I work in tech industry, and I grew up with technology. I love technology, but at the same time, I love normal life, or how to call it, you know?
Yeah, the real world.
Yeah, the real world, just to be offline, not all the time in digital world, you know?
Yeah.
And for example, like, I notice, like, how addictive it is.
Sure, yeah.
I know that I'm a total Facebook junkie, for example. But my newsfeed, for example, is, like, really, really, like, filtered. And every time when I come to Facebook now, I notice, like, a really good article or something that I really want to read. I don't see many pictures of my friends, for example, and stuff like that, because I filtered them out. I'm not interested in some stuff. And it's maybe more like a literally newsfeed for me.
Oh, okay.
But I noticed another thing, like, when I get to Facebook, just because of, like, the dopamine urge that I have, I cannot... Well, I did again the monkey.
Yeah. Those are monkeys, folks. That's what you're hearing in the background.
Well, I cannot properly concentrate on reading some longer, interesting article.
Oh, really?
So what I do is I always save it for later, using Pocket or something like that, and when I feel really like reading, I just read it.
Okay.
So my Facebook session is maybe like less than 1 minute.
Hmm.
But still, it's crazy.
I'm pretty similar. Well, maybe not with Facebook, but I go on Dig a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of these websites. They just throw news stories at you constantly. And they're all, like, a lot of them anyway, are like super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are just short little videos. But sometimes they're really long articles. So I'll do what you do. Mm-hmm. I'll open it in a new tab in my browser.
Yeah.
But then I've got like 40 tabs open.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the reason why I use Pocket or something like that, because I want to have it organized also for the future, because you might have a really interesting conversation like this, and then you say like, oh, I was reading this interesting article, I want to find it. And sometimes after 2 years, you're not able to Google search it. And then you have it archived, maybe you can add some tags or something, and you find it. But it's just my way of really organizing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's super important. As we go through our lives, we want to remember stuff, and we've got this great interface, this great technology to do it with the internet. And we used to just have photographs, but the thing in our writing, I guess, in a journal. But the thing with photographs, and even if you write on a piece of paper, those last theoretically forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pick up a photo from 100 years ago, and it's still there, and you just look at it. Paper gets faded and stuff, but you can read what people wrote to each other, because they used to write letters all the time 300 years ago. It's no problem, like kings and queens writing love letters and stuff.
Yeah.
And what's it going to be like for us, like 300 years from now? Is anyone going to be going online and reading like stuff that was not in any permanent form. It's just in this internet. Like, what's going to happen?
Well, but...
But maybe we'll come back to this items, like real items.
Oh! That was a jump.
The monkey just jumped straight out of the tree and landed on this corrugated tin roof and ran away. That was like a 15-foot jump. I would have broken my ankles had I jumped that far. And now he's walking down the street right below us. Oh, that's hilarious. I haven't even seen monkeys here yet. My first time in this area, anyway.
Wow.
I wonder if they're aggressive toward humans, because everywhere else I've seen monkeys, just in a town like this, you got to be super careful with your food and like just they're really sneaky. They're so smart. Yeah. Just as a side note, I worked or volunteered in Bolivia for a while in this animal sanctuary, and they had a bunch of monkeys there, and they told. When we went to see the monkeys, they told us, like, okay, make sure you empty your pockets, because these guys, they can reach right in your pocket and take anything out. They can undo buttons, unzip zippers. They're capuchin monkeys. They're super smart. And one time I went into the monkeys area, and I forgot that I had my hotel key in my pocket. And the instant I went up to see a monkey, it just went, bleep, just took the key out and had it, and it started dangling it in my face, like, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. I was like, oh, shit, now what do I do? And I'm like, okay, I gotta outsmart this bastard. Like, I gotta get my, because it's my hotel key. So I gotta get this thing back. So I pretended like I wasn't interested. I just started, like, turned my back and started walking away, and then as fast as I could, I went, boom! And like reached out my hand and snatched it from his hand, and wow. I got it back, and I hung it in his face like, ah, sucker.
And wasn't the monkey fighting back?
I think he was disappointed. I think he didn't like that, but I outsmarted him. And I'm like, so I am at least as smart as a monkey. So there's that.
My sister was in Thailand last month, and she showed me this video she did where they were like at some park place or something like that, and there were scooters parked, and it was near some forest or some jungle or something like that, and there were a lot of monkeys, and these monkeys went through all of those scooter seats. They would just open the seat and search what's inside, like throw everything out, and if they would find something, like for example bottle with water or something, they would just take it, open it, drink it, like. And I was looking at the video, oh my god, like, it's impossible. How is this possible? Like,
right.
It was really funny and also a bit scary.
Yeah, because they just know how to get in every motor or scooter. I once had this conversation with some people where we asked this question. I still don't think I know the answer. Is it illegal, or if you trained a monkey to go around and steal from people, like steal their wallet and bring it back to you?
Wow.
Would you get in trouble, or would the monkey get in trouble? Because the monkey's doing the stealing.
Yeah.
So do you put the monkey in like some sort of monkey prison? Or what do you do? Or is it your fault? I don't know.
I would say it's
maybe it's organized crime.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's a good point. You'd be like the Godfather. One day I will ask you for a favor.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, something to ponder.
Yeah, but there's probably no like monkey prison or zoo.
Yeah, that's it. Wow, that's probably it. All the monkeys in the zoo—they're former thieves.
Criminals.
Yeah, criminals. Right, and that's how they end up in the zoo, and they just never tell you that, huh? That's probably how they do it. Oh, okay. Oh, mystery solved.
There we go.
Okay. So what were we talking about? Oh, storing stuff long term. I just wonder how that's gonna work. Like,
yeah.
I'm afraid that, like, a lot of really interesting information will be just lost in the quantity of all the stored information from nowadays. But there's another paradox that I heard, that actually a lot of mediums that we use for storing information, they are not built to last. Like,
right.
For example, like if you burn a CD, okay, nobody's anyway burning CDs now, but like if you burned a CD maybe 15 years ago, you're not probably going to read it.
Yeah.
you're not
popular. Oh, it's done already.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah. Like, the durability is just so low. And yeah. And what, okay, so you're storing a lot of stuff on hard drives. I don't know, like hard drives, they can broke as well. Mm-hmm. Like if you've got SSDs nowadays, they don't last so long.
No.
You just have to take like magnetic tapes or something like that to store it really for hundreds of years. So it's interesting, but maybe...
Well, I think that it might happen that we might eventually get back to, for example, developing photos, or not really developing, but you know, because what happens is that, for example, we are on a vacation and we take hundreds of pictures of something, mm-hmm. and then we just have it in my hard drive or on my mobile phone, yeah. But the thing is that it could get lost anytime. And for example, I know that when we went on vacations or some events with my parents took a lot of pictures and they developed it by normal analog camera. And I still go back to them and I still go through the albums and I see those pictures. And I don't do this type of thing really with photographic folders in my computer. Like if I, sure. that I would go through it and just see them. I just have them, but I mm-hmm. never had the intention to open my computer and go to that folder and see, nice, this was nice, oh, this is nice mountain, or this is nice house, what we saw. But it's different when you like actually have to like take out the photo album and open it up and see those pictures. I think that this sort of thing is really different, yeah, and it has I don't know, maybe some more special occasion to it.
It does, yeah. I think I agree.
Than just to open some folder with pictures, because you don't have everything on your mobile, or at least for now.
Right. Yeah. And this used to be, I think, maybe it still is, a really big problem that, I've talked about this before, but people go on vacation and they take their phone. It used to be just their digital camera. Mm-hmm. Now it's probably their phone. And they take all these pictures, but they don't, first of all, they don't organize them at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe they upload them to Facebook, but then Facebook vastly reduces their size. I mean, yeah. it does a really high amount of compression on them. So you can't just download a picture from Facebook and then print it. It'll look like crap.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people never store the original anywhere. Yeah. They don't have like a long-term policy or whatever for storing it. And
You know what's actually really good? Like, I think it was maybe like 2 or 3 years ago that they introduced this functionality of like sorting all your photos in your phone automatically geographically. And that's sometimes that I use, like, I was in Morocco 2 years ago, and then I see this map on my phone and it just zoomed into Morocco and I can see all of the pictures. And then when I discover it after some time, I just go through those pictures and I say to myself, like, whoa, this was amazing. But still, I'm thinking a lot about actually printing some photos and storing in some album, because it's nice to have them. Like, for example, I'm a technology person and I just sometimes I really miss to have like more analog items in my flats, because like half of my life is on my hard drive. And like, for example, I use Spotify mainly for listening to music. And I don't have vinyls at home, I don't have CDs, I don't have my old tapes, they're left in my parents' house. And so basically, I have just digital music at home. And I miss it. Because like, if you really strongly love some music, you just maybe want to have like a physical reference to that emotional, you know, experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A while back, Katie's brother got a Black Keys CD, and the band, the Black Keys, and it came with, or I think he got the vinyl and it came with a CD, but he only got it because it came together. So, so he had one of each. And the vinyl was so cool looking that he bought a record player just so he could play it. And then he's just it's like, oh, I should start collecting records. And so now he goes to thrift shops and collects records. And
but it's beautiful to collect vinyls. The only problem is like if you want to move them from one flat to another.
It's super heavy.
Yeah.
my cousin is a DJ and he's got like crazy amounts of vinyls.
Okay.
And I was helping him recently to move the flat, but he told me, like, don't worry, you're not going to move the vinyls. I like ordered like the moving guys to do that, because that's hard work. That's hard work.
I bet it is.
And that's the thing, like, even with books, like, of course, I like to read more like normal books, but really a lot I read just from my iPad, because it's more convenient sometimes. Like when you go to work and you're reading some huge book, you don't have to carry a like really heavy book with you all the time. Mm-hmm. So you can just use your 15 minutes when you have them sometimes, and you can just read two or three pages.
Yeah.
So it's convenient. Mm-hmm. But you just want to have books in your shelf at home.
Yeah, but this is crazy. then you're becoming like overcrowded with
stuff.
Items.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I know, it's such a dichotomy.
And then, for example, when you want to like be able to pack your stuff in one van or one car and be able to move somewhere else, you cannot.
Yeah. No.
But maybe that's something to learn, to not get attached to these kind of things.
But if you're, I guess this is a good question. If you have like a Kindle with 1,000 books on it, or if you have a bookshelf with 1,000 books on it, is, I know they're different mediums, but isn't it still that you're attached to your things? You're still attached to 1,000 books?
You are.
Yeah, I think you still are.
It's just not a physical item. So I go through this all the time. I'd much rather read a paperback than a Kindle, but a Kindle will hold 1,000 books and it weighs less than one book.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the problem. We're here on holiday just for 3 weeks,
and we brought nine books.
Oh, really?
Because I don't have Kindle, and I'm not really used to it. Like, I really like book and to open it up and to go through the pages and to see it as a whole thing. But it's just so freaking heavy, like to bring nine books.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm enjoying so much that I have got like a whole day is free and I can just read.
Yeah.
It's amazing because it's different. Like when you have enough energy to read properly, to really dive into it.
Yeah,
like
you can sit
because
there.
If you're reading after 8 or 10 or 12 hours of working mentally, then your head is already done and you cannot read like that good. So
that's another thing. I think a lot of people like 5 years ago were predicting that books would just die out. There wouldn't be any more books. And now they're starting to turn the other way. That people still do read ebooks, but a lot of people are like you. They stare at a screen all day, and when they come home, they just don't want to stare at a screen. And so a paperback book is perfect for that.
Yeah.
Another thing, when you're in a beach tropical climate like this, that's great, is you take your book down to the beach, and you don't worry about it getting wet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not great to throw it in the water or something, but a wave comes and dribbles some water on it, whatever. You can set it down and you can go swimming and not worry about it getting stolen, probably.
Yeah.
You know, there are some advantages.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
And I also like when you're just walking around your bookshelf and you just notice one particular book, and when you see it, like the cover or something will really remind you that book.
Yeah.
And for a second, it takes you back to that book and you think again about it.
Yeah, that's something what I miss, or I would miss if I had my books stored in Kindle. Because I need like visual references.
Yeah.
I like visual things.
I totally agree.
So and that's something you wouldn't just come up to, and you wouldn't just you know, I was having my lunch and then I was walking past my library and then I, oh, okay, well, this book I could read again. But this wouldn't happen to me when I would have Kindle. Maybe I wouldn't remember, or I don't know.
I fully agree. I tend to remember like the stuff I read, but I forget the title of a lot of books.
Yeah.
I can remember the contents pretty well on a Kindle. I had this issue, like I did a book club with one of my books in Beijing, and everybody just got it on their Kindle. And, like, they were telling me they couldn't remember my name. So like when I came, they didn't know what my name was. They didn't know what I looked like. And like if you have the paperback, you can see it every time you pick it up. Like the title and the author, and you can see their picture in the book.
Yeah,
And I've got like, here's another thing. I mean, most people don't know this, but when you put a book on Kindle, if you own a Kindle, you can, if you get the one that's 3G connected, you can download books for free from anywhere in the world, basically, without a Wi-Fi signal.
Really?
So for some reason it hasn't worked for me in Sri Lanka, but most countries it works. I don't get on Wi-Fi at all, and it just grabs whatever 3G or 4G phone signal is out there and downloads all the books that I've ordered, updates it whenever I turn it on. And I don't have to pay for that. So, but the thing is, someone does, and so they've passed that cost off onto the authors. And so for each megabyte that your book is, then they charge you a certain number of cents. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if the customer downloads it from Wi-Fi or not, or 3G, they still charge you. So
really?
So the bigger your book is, the file, the more you get charged. Uh-huh. And so the books that I put on Kindle, I only have words. I don't have any pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And the paperback has pictures, it has maps. It, like, I think it really brings out the story so much nicer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just wouldn't be able to make any money on it if I did that on the Kindle. Yeah. And that's the same with any author. So it's a lot of books, a lot of nonfiction books have pictures in them. And especially in the middle, they'll put pictures.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
You just don't see that on Kindles.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like it's not the whole item. It's missing some parts. And
yeah, some qualities are not there. Same with all these formats. But then it's so nice. That's the other thing, though. It's so nice to just have one device, or even like everything I've ever done, I can just put it on a hard drive.
Yeah.
And put it in a safe deposit box, and like probably will last a long time. I might have to, like, it won't last forever, so I'll have to get a new hard drive in a few years and make sure it's backed up. But
yeah,
it's. I think probably there's a lot of people working on solving this, but mm-hmm. it seems like it's such a common problem in society today mm-hmm. that like we're becoming more mobile. Like a lot more people are choosing not to have a home base, and there's mm-hmm. like the digital nomad thing. People move around and they don't want to accumulate possessions, but at the same time they don't want to lose all their memories. So,
but this like digital world is perfect for this. You carry it in small device, and you can have like everything from your life, like back to books and vinyls. Like, I really like the strategy they do for recent years. Like, when you buy a vinyl, some music, you automatically get download codes for MP3s.
Oh yeah.
That's really cool, because then you have nice item and you have it available in digital world.
Yeah, best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I think you guys are right. The digital thing just lacks, like, it lacks emotion. It lacks heart.
Yeah, and but it's interesting. It's just our psychology. Like,
it is, yeah.
Evolution, like how we become, how we evolved in the world of physical items. So, of course, that's the way how memory works. Yeah. So.
Totally. I mean, maybe, like, once we have virtual reality that we were talking about before, maybe it'll feel more real.
Yeah.
Like, you'll have your bookshelf in your home, but it's not really a bookshelf. It's all
that's actually a really good
in the virtual
point.
World.
That even if, like, from this virtual world,
if
we would trick actually your brain to remembering that item better, but I think it might work.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting.
Especially if there's a brain implant. Jack yourself in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an exciting future. It's also really sad, because I think... in the future, like, I love travel, and this is just like my life. I love going to new places, and there's just nothing that compares to going somewhere. I could describe this place for an hour, and you wouldn't get the same feel for it you would get if you just spent 10 seconds here in real life. But in the future, I think maybe you'll be able to do that. I think maybe you could actually come here virtually. But then, is that like where people just stop traveling? They just never leave their home.
Yeah, but you know? I think there's a huge disadvantage. Like, for example, we were looking forward to this holiday almost for 1 year.
Ah,
and,
right.
And it builds up, you know, mm-hmm. you're really looking forward to it then. And when you arrive after that long time, it's really valuable for you. So you really try to get most of it out of it. And if I imagine that I would just put VR goggles on, mm. and be instantly here for $10 or something. That it would buy an app for like Sri Lanka for $10. You know?
Yeah, right.
I would be like, yeah, okay, cool. Island, palm trees, yeah. Mm, okay, that's it.
Okay, back home.
Yeah. So you would probably not get so much out of it.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's a good point. Huh. That anticipation
but
is such a
big thing.
But you
never know, maybe in that virtual Sri Lanka app, it would work like, you know, yesterday when we were having the lunch, with the lady.
It would be perfectly orchestrated by AI for your like former experiences.
Yeah,
maybe,
the old lady in virtual reality would also come and ask you, "Do you want me to learn you how to cook Sri Lankan food?" And it would be like, "Yay!" And then in virtual reality, would actually be able to do that.
Already in virtual reality.
Maybe it already happens, and we don't know it. I don't know. I heard this theory. This is so crazy, but God, this stuff keeps me up at night. What would happen if you were a god? Like, you could do anything, go anywhere at any point. It'd be like having virtual reality, but like even better. Like, you can just do whatever you want, and eventually that would just get boring, probably. And you'd want like the real human experience. So wouldn't it make perfect sense that you'd send yourself into a human body and then just unplug your understanding of what reality really is, and so like your human form can never actually realize that you're actually a god. Isn't that exactly what you would do eventually after like a million years of just playing around?
Really good. That's really good.
What if that's what happened? I lose a lot of sleep over this stuff.
Wow. Okay, this is strong thought. Yeah.
It
makes perfect sense. I would probably do that.
Alternative realities that could actually be true, that there's nothing stopping it from happening. Maybe it's just slightly more more complicated than what we think reality is. I don't know. I don't know. I think about all this stuff. Like, what about AI? That seems to be a big subject nowadays.
Yeah, huge.
You guys look at that, like artificial superintelligence?
I read a lot about it.
Yeah, do you think it's possible? Do you think it'll happen?
Yes, I definitely think it will happen, but the question is when. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just really like super positive, you know, maybe super optimistic. Like, Ray Kurzweil, yeah. He says like 2049.
Oh, I know, he's always making these crazy predictions. Yeah.
But even if it will happen like in 500 years, it doesn't matter. Like, it will probably come. But if you're talking about these topics, have you heard about this book from Yuval Noah Harari's name?
Harari.
Yeah, and it's called Homo Deus.
No.
He's actually, if I'm correct, he's a studied historian, and he did his PhD at Oxford. I hope that I'm correct, and he wrote this book about Homo sapiens.
Yeah.
It's basically our history. Yeah. And this next book is called Homo Deus. So it's about like a completely new kind of human type that's upgraded by the technology. And this whole book is like a historical prediction. So it means that it's based on all this historical knowledge that we already have, the facts that we are sure that we understand.
Yeah.
He's trying to make some sort of prediction,
okay,
like what will happen. And that is a perfect book about it. I'm just reading it now. It's quite thick, and it's really dense with all of the ideas and thoughts. So it's quite difficult to read, but at the same time, it's so interesting.
Mm.
I would definitely recommend that.
Okay, cool. I'll have to look into it. And I just noticed my battery is getting low. It's almost dead. So I'm going to pause it quick. Okay, we are back. One thing I just thought of it with respect to travel is sunscreen. And like in the tropics, we're like 7 degrees north of the equator right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's just a daily battle for people with light skin. Trying not to get burned.
Yeah, and that's what happened to us the first day.
Right away?
Yeah. Like the first day on the beach, and we get so sunburned. My forehead was swollen with sunburn.
Oh, man.
Stupid white people.
Right. And I've got a really stupid story. Like, if you look at my feet now, they're completely sunburned here down.
Yeah.
Because I forgot to cream them down there.
Every day. Like,
every day.
Because he was always creaming his feet while standing, and he just can't reach because he's not that flexible.
Oh, yeah.
So he just can't reach. reach below the ankles. Oh, so you just didn't do it at all.
So it looks really, really bad now.
It does. It looks really bad. Keep that in the shade.
Yeah, but it actually doesn't hurt. It's completely fine, but I just forgot to cream it.
Yeah. I had this problem where I was sitting and wearing shorts like I am now. And so I did sunscreen all over, like all over my body and all here. But I forgot when I stand up, my shirts come up a little bit on my thigh. And so there's a band of red just on both sides. Like, oh no. I'm always scared of this all day. Like, oh, did I miss a little spot? And you can go online and look at all these horrible pictures of people that got really sunburned. And
yeah.
It's so fun to look at them, but you can just see how painful it is.
Yeah. Like, my ears are peeling now. My forehead is peeling.
You can tell. Actually, I can tell with both of you that your faces got burned right away.
Yeah.
And the locals think it's so funny because they all have really dark skin. And I just don't think this is an issue for them at all. But it just, the sun is just powerful here. It gets you quickly. I'm rolling down my sleeves as we speak. Even going out like an hour before sunset, I'm pretty sure I'm okay, but I could just feel it reflecting off the water. And what about surfing? How do you?
Well, this the thing, it's really easy to get sunburned on surf because you are on the sun all the time. And also the reflection from the water, so you can just have it reflected all in your face. And it's really easy to get sunburned. So you have to just use really really high factors or zinc.
And funny, like I was first couple of days I was surfing in just a white shirt of t-shirt, and actually the color was a bit lower, and part of my neck, just the small stripe, got really burnt. And then I had to buy a different, like a surfing t-shirt with a higher collar that would protect that spot, and also with the long sleeves. Because like this part of this front part of forearm got completely burnt, so yeah, you have to be careful. And also like it will get just burnt.
I mean, like the water is really warm here, so no one's wearing a wetsuit, I think. And
no.
So does the sunscreen just stay on though, or does it wash off right away?
Well, like it can wash off because, for example, when you are pedaling and you are on the board. And you are in contact with the board, it can probably get washed away with, you know, like, or scratched away. So you have to like keep in mind that you should probably put it on you more often.
But
that's it, I would say.
Well, the sun will definitely teach you a lesson, like how to apply your sun cream properly and to not forget, like, about your ears, for example.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you guys have this, but kids in America, when they go to the dentist, they'll put some sort of dye in your mouth, like a blue or maybe it's red dye. And so any spot that you are missing when you brush your teeth will turn blue.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you can just look at your teeth and see what you're missing.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of that. It's kind of like that with sunscreen.
Yeah.
The sun puts a red mark anywhere that you're forgetting to put your sunscreen.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, how is surfing going otherwise?
Like
you're pretty new at it, right?
Yeah. Like, we didn't go today. But the last couple of days, like, it was on Andre's first time and mine second surf holidays, and I really started to feel that I'm finally doing some progress, and it really makes me like so happy that I would love to do it every day if I can, or like as often as I can.
Yeah, and Sri Lanka is actually such a good place. For beginners.
Yeah, like the beach breaks here are really beautiful. Like as soon as the sea is calm and it's not much windy, like the waves breaks really beautifully at constant line, and they are not that fast.
Yeah.
So you can learn pretty easily.
Sorry, I'll just try to move myself.
And also, like, it's really convenient when for a beginner who doesn't have his own surfboard to just rent it for like a day or an hour, because it's really cheap. So
oh yeah
yeah yeah
oh. Oh, I guess I never looked into the prices. How much would a board cost?
It's like 300 rupees, which is like euro and half for an hour. And like 1,000 rupees for a day. So I would say it's really like, I don't know, €5-6 maybe for a whole day. I would say it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's cheap enough that it almost doesn't make sense to bring your own board.
Yeah.
No, right? Definitely
but
not for beginners.
I mean, as soon as you become more advanced, of course you want to have your own, because it's like you have to, it's like with skis, you also buy your own skis and use them and know how they work and how does it feel when you like...
to get one buddy with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Become one thing.
Okay, we did meet some Australians who had a surfboard, or the guy did, and he was trying to get on one of the trains. It was
I can imagine it must be pretty hard when you are traveling with public transport here with surfboard.
Yeah.
I can't imagine like how it would work in if you want to get on a bus full of people and just put your surfboard in it.
Oh, I know. Well, he said at first like, "Oh, looks like we're not getting on this train, huh?" And I said, the next one's going to be just as packed. You might as well try. And so he actually got the conductor to put the board in the room that the employees use.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Which is pretty empty.
But it's nice.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then just came aboard with their backpacks, which everyone else had.
But can you imagine traveling by bus with a surfboard? The buses are so crazy here. They're just rushing so much. And sometimes at the bus stop, they're just not really stopping. They're just really slowly, slowly moving. And then you have to jump off or jump on, you know, with a surfboard. That would be impossible.
Well, while the bus is moving, you need to stand on your board. You get more practice that way.
Yeah. But also, I wanted to say about surfing here, like, there are a couple of, like, really great teachers. So. Of surfing here, and you can get it for example paying like 2,500 rupees, so that's what, that's 12 and a half euros. So I don't know, it's like $15.
Yeah, probably a bit more than that.
Yeah
cheap.
And it helps you so much. For example, Nina, at her first holiday, she didn't have like a proper teacher, and when you're starting, you really need one. And
so even though I was there for like 12 days, I didn't do much of a progress. And it was also because we went to Tenerife in Canary Islands, and the sea there was pretty... it wasn't that smooth as here, because it was pretty windy and waves would break with a lot of directions and the swell would move a lot, and it would be really difficult to find the right spot, and you would pedal all the time and get tired, and your arms would be falling off, and I would spend 80% of my time being washed by the waves. But it was great as well. But here, when we got here, it was much better for us as beginners to get used to the board and how and to learn pop-ups.
Yeah.
In, like,
so basically to stand up from the surf.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the most important thing. Like, you're basically lying on a surf and you're pedaling and trying to catch the wave, and then suddenly the right moment you have to stand up as quickly as you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to the
and
right,
in the right position.
Position,
because if you put your feet just a bit more to the back, you're gonna fall.
Or to the side.
You will know that if you will just put it more to the front, and you have to find your way. You have to find a balance.
Yeah.
And actually, we are here next to SK Town Beach. Uh-huh. And before we surfed at Veligama Beach, and that's amazing for beginners because it's sandy beach. Yeah. There are no rocks in a water, so even if you fall or anything, you won't hurt yourself. You will just hit the sand, or maybe just the wave will do a small washing machine with you. But it's completely fine. It's completely safe, and you can just try it. And the waves are quite regular, and you get your chance often, so you just have opportunity to fail like 100 times in a row, and that's the way how you learn it, you know.
In the same time, you get a lot of opportunities to actually stand on it, because
that's the point,
since the waves aren't that fast and aren't that big, and when they are coming into the regular pace, even though you fall 100 times, you can also like be able to stand 100 times. You have a lot of chances here.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you're like almost talking me into doing this. I tried one time.
Yeah.
I took a lesson in Brazil once, and I was terrible at it. It was just...
But, you know, that's the thing about surfing. I think it's actually the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, because...
To have fun.
Like, so many friends already told me that, like, yeah, we tried surfing, and, you know, it's not so good. It just looks really cool, but it's actually so difficult. It's so difficult to stand up and to keep the balance, and you have to invest so much energy into it to get better at it and actually enjoy it. But I came here with a mindset that I had like zero expectation. Mm. I just said to myself, like, okay, I will try it. Maybe I will get a little bit drowned.
A little bit drowned.
I will fall into the water 200 times, and I will just say, like, okay, that's it. I tried surfing. I will just read a book. But actually, with this zero expectation, you just enjoy every single small thing about it. Mm. And then it's amazing. I absolutely don't mind, like, falling all the time and failing all the time. It's just beautiful.
I actually like it even. Like,
yeah.
I like how, when, of course, it's not that difficult spot, and when the waves aren't that heavy or fast, and when you just fall, and sometimes you get washing machined.
Yeah.
And you just maybe let yourself feel the...
The power of the wave,
and yeah, and you get you have to be underwater for a while, but then you just swim up, and you see nothing happen. It's all good. I'll do it again and again and again.
And then you realize just, that it's fun.
Yeah,
it's even
it's
fun,
fun
to fall from board and be washed out.
Everybody falls. So that's the thing. Like,
it's a great outlook.
Yeah,
it's a good life lesson too. Just
trying it. Yeah. Totally.
Huh. And it's also what I love about it is that you just have to be cautious and to keep in mind that it's not you who choose when will you ride the wave, but it's the sea. Because, you know, you just are there and you are waiting for the wave to come, and you just have to react to it. Mm-hmm. And not that you decide, okay, I will take it later. No, you have to do it at the right moment. Otherwise, you won't stand up and you won't have that experience.
Right. And I guess the sea is a lot more powerful than you, too. It's one of the beautiful things about being in nature, and then one of the scary things, too, is you really understand how weak you are compared to the natural world.
Yeah.
Like, you mean nothing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And also, like, you have to like accommodate, or how would I say it, like to adapt to the sea and to go there, because, for example, the best swell is in the morning or in the evening, so you have to get up early and be there if you want to really enjoy it as much as you can. Mm-hmm. So there's also a good thing about it, that it's learning you how to have some kind of discipline, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed about surfers. They do have that discipline. They have to get up really early.
Yeah.
Like, get out there as soon as dawn happens and get on their boards.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't even say that it's kind of discipline, because in this relaxed environment of surfers, it's just like a...
Because you want to be there.
Yeah, you just have such a strong motivation that you just wake up because you're looking forward to it.
Okay, yeah. Oh, that's great. I could totally see myself doing this for a while, but I'm probably like you guys. I'd be just hooked as soon as I tried.
Yeah,
you
know? We're totally hooked now.
Yeah. Like, I did rock climbing once just to try it out, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is so fun. And like, all I wanted to do was rock climb. And
So it's
very easy to get hooked in these things. But it's good. It's like, it's very good for you. It's very healthy.
Yeah. And like recent months, I was thinking a lot about my way of life because I was working too much. I'm a software developer, so I spend majority of my time like in front of a computer, and I was looking for some new activity that would actually be good in combination with this. So it means that I would like to be more outside on fresh air, maybe on sun, do some sports, because the best way how to like clear your mind is to move your body, you know. And actually, this is perfect. This really makes sense. I would love to do it more. And actually, this inspired us to think, like, maybe we should move to some other country or to some other city. Because, like, for example, if we would like to surf a lot, that would mean we have to save more money and to travel at least 2 times a year to some country that has sea, because we live in Central Europe. So, but then we realize that we won't get so good at it if we do it only like for, in total, maybe 1.5 months, a year. That's just not enough. Right. So it makes sense to live in some country where you can serve like 3 times a week or something. And we're thinking about Portugal, to be honest.
It's great, yeah, why not? I mean, yeah, we talked about that before, like last night. It's cool that in Europe you can do this. You can move to another country pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's like in the States, we can move between states, no problem.
Yeah, but this is something I noticed, like in States, it's completely normal that you travel for your work. Like you get some really good opportunity and you would just move to a completely different state.
That's right, yeah.
In Europe, I think it's just like for us from Eastern Europe, it definitely started with the European Union. Before it was much more difficult.
Mm.
Like, for example, our parents couldn't do that at all.
Oh, in Soviet times.
Yeah, they would be shot at the border. You know?
Right, right.
So actually, this is something that our parents remind us a lot. Like, I remember, like, when I was a small kid and we went just to Austria from Slovakia just to visit it. And my parents saying to us, like, guys, you have to really value this because we wouldn't be able to do this, you know? And now we have this opportunity. We can go anytime, anywhere. We feel so free. And I think it would be such a mistake to not take advantage of it, you know?
Mm.
Like, I have a lot of discussions with friends, like, you know, if you should live, you should live in country where you were born, because you should make like some positive impact there, you know, to get things better and stuff like that. But I think people should travel much more.
Yeah.
I feel it's complete. Maybe I will return and I will live in Slovakia again. I know that for some time I want to travel a bit more because it's such a strong inspiration, and then it can maybe bring that inspiration back and bring some positive energy.
Oh, yeah. And if nothing else, you'll be bringing back a different point of view.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You never had
and that's so
before.
Important. So important.
Yeah, you can't possibly see the world through someone else's eyes if you haven't traveled to wherever they're from. It's just, you can't get that perspective.
Yeah, but like every time when I do some traveling, I remind myself like how important it is and that I should like do it more.
Mm.
And it's so important like to meet new people.
Right, and since I've been with Katie, I've learned one way of doing that is move somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to travel and really get to know some new place. So
yeah,
it sounds like maybe Portugal's the right spot for you guys.
Yeah, it's definitely
probably.
Sounds like.
Oh.
Let's see what will happen. We'll definitely go for us like a small trip there, and we would like to go in August for a surf camp.
And also travel a bit around.
Yeah, and let's see how we will like it and what will happen in the time, but why not do it? Like, we're totally young and we are free, so why not do it?
Yeah, it's a crazy world, but it's a great world that
like
we have these opportunities to do this. Yeah, I love it. I love hearing that. Huh. Well, I think we ought to get you out of the sun now, Andre, because you're going to burn to a crisp. We had to move because I had to plug my recorder into the wall, and that put us into the sun, and especially Andre, poor Andre here.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Your feet are already red.
They're in shade, so it's fine.
But yeah, we can wrap this up. So thank you guys so much for coming out and talking
problem.
With me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you.
It's a great conversation.
It was great to
thank
meet you.
For, yeah.
As well.
Special thanks to Andrej and Nina for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. In case you haven't seen it yet, my second book, 1,000 Days Between Part 2, In Pursuit of the South American Dream, is out right now and it's available on Amazon. You can find it by going to my website, and you can read about it, more about it there. My website is 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1,000. daysbetween.com. Thanks for checking it out. Let me know what you think, and I'll catch you next time.